sit right back, then you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
John, attaboy, that was right on target again, and there goes that ship.
You know, those new laser locators allow you to just precision in and just zap that boat and blow it out of the water. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted, we like to just laugh sometimes in their face or at ourselves. It depends which way it fits.
Well, we often do both, and we are unabashed creationists. We do admit to terrible bias and, you know, worldviews and all that. We do believe in creation and a creator and that we are here with purpose and design. Well,
let's now we got our throats all cleared in harmony.
Let's do a little rocky thinking today.
Rocky?
Yeah, let's think about rocks.
Oh, no, not Rocky. Oh, okay. I thought we were going to start there chasing chickens, man.
Well, John, it's my turn to pick the topic, and me being a nutty old rock hound with rocks in my head, I love to look at rocks. I love to go out in nature and, you know, everybody is looking up as they're walking. Oh, look at the lovely sky, and it's pretty here. And I'm walking with my eyes focused on the path in front of me. Let's see what's on the earth today.
Keeps your shoes clean.
I pick up coins where other people don't. But anyway, I like to study rocks. I was a geology major, and I've always been a rock hound at heart. And I like to look at the biblical record of rocks, stones, and everything.
The Bible uses rocks in so many ways, so many metaphors, so many real, metaphorical, illustrative, every which way.
Well, think about it. I mean, the Rock of Ages, think about he is without sin, cast the first stone. Stones have been used by God for
the giant
fire,
rock which
brimstone.
Comes and destroys the image
the
in
judgment,
Daniel 2.
Almost all the judgment images
call
have
for the rocks
to
fall on them.
Oh, yes.
Mountains to fall. Mountains, whole mountains.
You know, Jesus made it real clear. If you want a saving relationship with him, you've got to fall on the rock. Otherwise, the rock will fall on you.
Moses had a rock in the wilderness. There's just, and there's stones and precious stones and all kinds of things that relate to rocks.
Well, so okay. I've got plenty of ground to dig in. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, we can really start, I suppose, by saying the fact that you and I are more or less reconstituted rocks.
Well, the Bible says cement. God kind of formed us from the dust.
Water, lots of water and a little bit of rock.
Powderized,
that's cement, buddy.
Powderized. Old brickhead. Blockhead has a whole new meaning now, folks.
That's right.
God took the dust of the ground, pulverized rock,
pulverized
and formed
rock.
Humans, and then breathed into them the breath of life.
So we are living stones, so to speak.
Building built up, according to the Bible.
Living stones, according to St. Peter. Peter, who was, of course, called by Jesus, Cephas,
whose name
the stone.
Meant rock.
That's right.
Peter meant rock. Petros.
And he caught that because in his book, in 1 Peter, he says that we are all part of a living temple. We're stones built up by God into the church.
Actually, let's go to a text found in Ezekiel a little bit, describing actually a fallen angel, but where he was before he fell, because rocks aren't necessarily a bad thing in the Bible.
No.
What do we got?
No, because God originally created some wonderfully beautiful stones. And, you know, here's a hint that in the Garden of Eden, there was quite a lot of rock hounding to do. Here we go. Ezekiel 28:13, speaking of a special being we'll talk about in just a minute, said, "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the ruby, the topaz, and the diamond." I know. Cha-ching! The beryls, the onyx and the jasper, the lapis lazuli, the turquoise and the emerald, and the gold, the workmanship of your settings and socket was in you on the day that you were created. They were prepared. You were the anointed cherub who covered, and I placed you there. You walked in the midst of stones of fire. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. And he goes, this is actually a very clear description of Lucifer. But the interesting thing was about this, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You're corrupted your wisdom by reason of your splendor. It kind of looks like that, among other things, in the Garden of Eden, where there was these beautiful stones, we assume all these gems were fairly easy to find in the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. There, Lucifer, I don't know, maybe these stones started to, you know, oh, how pretty. Well, let me just kind of start placing them here and here on me and here and there. And who knows? But certainly the beauty of God's creation in the gem world was there, especially evident in the Garden of Eden.
Apparently he found beauty or value mm-hmm. in them, and he said, I'm just going to take them and just cover you with value.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you could look at that. Mm-hmm. You were such a valuable angel. You're
yes.
a valuable being.
Covering
that,
cherub.
Mm-hmm. If Ezekiel was trying to use language in the ancient mm-hmm. world, which would mm-hmm. ascribe value to this being called Lucifer, who became mm-hmm. Satan, we mm-hmm. know of.
Right.
You know,
the adversary.
The prophet was given the vision of, just think of all the precious gems that man values so much here on earth that mm-hmm. adorn the richest kings and the richest merchants, and just thickly bedeck them in a robe that covers this being. I mean, more than any crown, his entire raiment.
Like a robe, yeah, wow.
And so he would be, in other words, Lucifer was most precious to God.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the image of gems. Mm-hmm. And so now I want to ask, in evolutionary thought,
mm-hmm.
where does true value come from? Where does the concept of worth come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what gives something value in an evolutionary philosophical mindset or an evolutionary mind?
Well, it's kind of hard to find in a Big Bang type theory and evolution, a materialistic evolution theory, because we're just here by chance. We really have no value. We were talking about that last week.
Just a buzzard luck.
It's kind of familiar in my thinking. But, you know, if you think about it, in the real world, John, the way to establish any value on anything is, frankly, the good old adage of what the market will bear. In other words, what somebody will pay for something is, in essence, what establishes the value.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, if you look at what God has paid for you and for me, that establishes our value.
Yeah, and otherwise, you don't have value. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the evolutionary thinking and evolutionary educational circles, because of all the mm-hmm. wonderful psychology, we're afraid to say children need to have self-esteem. They need to have value.
Sure.
And so they say, oh, because you draw, so mm-hmm. don't criticize them or else you make them think they're not very valuable.
Yes,
they
right.
think that criticism takes away value. Actually, criticism, correct, constructive criticism, refines the value.
If it's bathed in love, it is a positive thing.
It's a positive thing, and it helps refine the value. Just like mm-hmm. the talks about these texts about being refined. But
yes.
the idea here is that if your value said came because you played violin wonderfully,
mm-hmm.
and what if you got an accident and lost your left hand?
Well, yeah,
all of a sudden,
your value
as a person, if it was all wrapped up in what you could do or a thing you could perform,
yes.
you lost your value. So,
some of our seniors begin to lose value because of their losing their ability to function.
It's yes.
like, what good am I? What am I worth?
Yeah, what am I worth?
And what's even worse is when a society says, you're right. You can't do anything. You don't have value.
Let's take you out.
Yeah.
You know, and the irony
which is evolutionary thinking.
That's really sad. The thing is that value is something that is ascribed to you from without,
mm-hmm.
not something that you have inherently within mm-hmm. that you can generate. Mm-hmm. In other words, when you were right, it's mm-hmm. what the market will bear.
Mm-hmm.
And in this sense here, we talked about what God would bear,
mm-hmm.
and which is the ultimate value, of course.
Well, you know, years ago, John, I had a chance to go to Alaska, and I'm, like I say, a rock hound, and Alaska mm-hmm. is a good place to get gold, and, you know, I don't have time or the expertise to go find it, so
you go buy it.
I went to go to a place where they basically bring in the gold nuggets from the field to a refiner, and I purchased a nugget there, but I asked him while I was there, could I see what you do here? And he took me in the back room and he showed me a refinery, you know, a furnace where they were melting gold.
How big was it? I'm just curious.
Oh, it was probably like a coffee pot size thing. It wasn't huge, just a certain amount, a few ounces of gold was being cooked. But at the top of it, you could see this scum rising, this dark material. And when he took this out, it was kind of in an ingot form as it was cooling, and he broke the top of it off, which was this scum. Refining something brings the impurity impurities out, and you know, you can get rid of it there real simply. It becomes very pure gold. And if you, you know, going back to jewels and perhaps thinking of us as maybe jewels, as I think you were beginning to reference Malachi 3 and talking about how God sometimes thinks of us as his precious treasure, his own possession. King James says in verse 3:17 that we are his
jewels.
His
he makes jewels. Up his jewels.
Makes us his jewels. Think about that, John. If you go to the Smithsonian and you take a look at one of the world's greatest
rock collection.
Oh, unbelievable.
Drop dead, beautiful, gorgeous.
Yes, you know, you've got to drag your jaw around the place. If you go into that particular room where they have jewels, they have the Hope Diamond there on display.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And it's a beautiful, dark blue, well, kind of a grayish blue a diamond that's flawless, and it's just simply wonderful. Well, what gave it that blue color over against, let's say, something perfectly clear and pure? Well, it had some impurities. It had some contact with other things as it was being formed, and it yet that location where it grew and formed, because of that contact with these other materials, gave it a unique quality and a unique value that made it literally priceless. There's no other gem like it. If you think about your trials and my trials and the pressures and the things that we've come through, the refining
and
expertise.
And yet, if we stay close to Christ, the refiner,
yes,
we become so precious.
And we'll be different from each other because of the places we came from, like the Hope Diamond came from a different place and the contact it had.
Yeah.
Gave it a color that none other had.
Yeah. So, you know, Stan, I like the text over in Peter where Peter says that we are God's holy people, his precious jewels, his holy nation. And he calls it peculiar treasure is the idea. In other words, God is refining people. And he says, I want to wear you. In other words, I want you to be mine. It's actually a box you can almost put your, it's almost like secreted away possession can be the idea behind that term. So when you think of the rocks and you see precious gems and, you know, you need to realize that people are like that for God, even more so. They are wonderfully treasured by God. And then, of course, we go back to the original point. Because God has placed that value on you. You have a,
just a little thing that Jesus said that, you know, I'm going to quote completely out of context. Not that I ever do that. But, Jesus said when he was talking in Jerusalem in the temple to some people who were trying to quiet some of the young people there, Jesus said, I tell you, if these became quiet, the stones would cry out. And, you know, if you think about it, stones do tell us a lot. This, according to Job, it says, ask the earth, the earth will tell you. Study even the stones of this earth, and you will see value, you will see the Creator's hand, you will see uniqueness in color and form and organization and crystals, and just wonderful properties that a God who loves beauty and diversity clearly displayed in the making of those gems.
Yeah, and if you look at people, I think we need to look at people like they are rocks. Not that they have rocks in their head so much, but really.
Some of them do.
But the whole point is if we looked at people as precious as God does, we could start being part of the positive shaping process. You know, because really the reality is as you are valued, you feel you humbly want to value others again, too. There's kind of a reciprocal desire awakened in you. And that makes us all part of God's precious stones that he's going to make up one day, he says. And that's one day that can't come anytime soon, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, evolution and creationists both agree we came from the rocks. But what a difference between chance versus somebody who lovingly formed us out of the stones of the earth and breathed into his life and allowed us to go through refining fires in this world, not to pain us, not to punish us, but to develop things.
To make us more beautiful.
To refine, to increase the value even of us.
And our character. More precious than jewels, actually, is what the Bible also describes as more precious than any fine stone. And that's what you can have if you follow Christ. And so we hope you'll do that and tune in again for another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.